This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, or 680 AM, but if you're away from the dial and you want to hear all the programming right here at 92.9 FM ESPN, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app, free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime. You can even listen on demand right there on the Odyssey app. Dennis Fuller producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company, as he is each and every Friday, is, of course, Tim Murray. He's the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. VSiN's College Football Betting Tailgate shows tomorrow, 9 a.m. Central Time, America's number one pregame college football show. You can also hear him each and every weeknight on VSiN Primetime on X at 1 Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
You know, imagine we'll get into it. I'm sure folks on the network have talked a lot about it. How's a damn good win by the Tigers last night, man?
I thought so, too.
Coming back, down on the road, Chase Center, San Francisco's a good team. You're an underdog. Betting market moved against you. Come back, you win that game. That's a nice win to go out to Maui. So that was solid. Good job, and really good second half after certainly a sluggish first half.
I totally agree. I think it was a very good win. And now, to me, I thought it was also big that they finally had some second half game pressure, and I thought they stepped up and they made some clutch free throws. They had a couple of clutch stops. I just am always very hesitant in November. Like, you know, I don't think very highly of my alma mater's beloved basketball conference. I don't know how good USF is or isn't, but I did think in terms of what the game said about the team, I thought it was nice.
What I will say about San Francisco, and this isn't to start a Football Friday show going deep dive on a West Coast Conference team that's not named Gonzaga, they beat Boise State pretty handily, and Boise State's the favorite to win the Mountain West. So, you know, that's a little bit of a transitive property, and as you alluded to, November games don't mean a ton. But I think, as we've talked about a couple times on this show, they do mean a lot for Memphis because the AAC is not expected to be much of a conference this year. And to get I think that'll be deemed a road win, right? Because it was a neutral.
It's the semi away, but I think you're right. I think in the eyes of the committee, I don't know how that can be.
So that should be more than likely a quad one win, right? As long as San Francisco can stay in the top 75 in the net. Which I've not got into my net nerdery just yet, but I think that'll be looked at as a good win regardless. And to your point, you know, come back, Hegarty didn't play great, right? He only finished with 13 points. So
he was clutch, but he was not, like, he didn't have a good night, but he was clutch.
Yeah. So look, going out to what is going to be a brutal Maui Invitational, where you open up against UConn, to get that win was a nice start to the long road trip away from home.
Yeah, and to me, it's like that was a game that you could have lost, and that's kind of where I net out. It's like you didn't lose it. I think what we clearly know about this team is this team will guard you, and they're pretty tough. Like, that's usually a decent formula in college basketball.
And like you said, you know, November basketball, and at the end of the day, does a result in November mean a ton for March from a standpoint of on the floor? No. But for the resume, they've now got a road win at UNLV and a road win. I think we'll have to double check this. Maybe they get, I would be kind of unfortunate if that was considered a neutral game against San Francisco. But regardless, you're 4-0 headed out to Maui, where you're going to be tested, obviously, every which possible way, including UConn out of the jump there. But this is that was a nice win, a nice bounce-back win there on the road, and you go out to the island feeling pretty good about yourself.
All right. Speaking of Thursday and getting us into where we are on the calendar, you tell me if I'm being absurd here, because I am open to this idea. But I've got PTSD. Because I feel like in society, whenever we start to have a good thing, we start to overdo it, and then it always ends up becoming a worse form. See opening day. I am a believer that opening day is Cincinnati, Ohio, after the parade. That should be the first game. And I get why it's not. It's all money. But I had one of my buddies in the old gambling syndicate, if you will, declaring it Feast Week. And I am a traditionalist. I understand that when we can turn on some college hoops at 10:30 and we can see a ballroom at a random Caribbean resort. But Feast Week has to mean something. It's the Monday of Thanksgiving, and I love Feast Week like everyone. But when we now, like, we're creeping in on this territory of, all right, let's move Feast Week now. What if we get the whole weekend before? What if we now we're calling this Feast Week? It's not Feast Week. Next week is Feast Week.
I thought that was a very good rant, and I agree with you.
Thank you.
Feast Week does not include Missouri hosting Pacific and Notre Dame hosting Elon. It is all of those schools are headed to a tropical location. Hashtag rest in peace, Alaska shootout.
Yeah.
Yes. Do we have the Baja Mar going on right now? Yep. And was that game crazy between Baylor and St. John's? Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. But Feast Week starts when we've got Maui Invitational. We've got Battle for Atlantis. We've got the Players Era, whatever the hell they're calling it, the NIL tournament in my backyard. It has not started yet. It's fun. I like these daytime basketball games, but I'm gonna agree with you on this one, man.
And then I hate when the response is like, "Well, if you love Feast Week, why wouldn't you want more of it?" It's like it is a special thing. Like you can't just have all of it. Like it's the whole month of November is not Feast Week. It has to be something sacred.
We're living in a society.
Correct. It has to have rules, and we have to protect it. It makes it more special. When you have it all the time, it's not as special.
Can I applaud Duke and Arizona? A home and home, like UNC in Kansas, I'll give you your kudos too. I love Feast Week. I love these neutral site games. Next week is going to be absolutely insane with these matchups. I do feel like they're getting better every year. Like these teams, maybe they just don't care about preseason losses. I mean, we saw Gonzaga play Baylor to start the year up in Sioux Falls at the Pentagon. But we got a true blue blood home versus home situation tonight. Duke is at Arizona tonight. That's kind of cool, man. So, Arizona went to Cameron last year and gave him a taste. They beat him last year.
And Coach K like stormed off. It was it was electric.
And lastly, you know, Memphis went out to San Francisco to start their trip, right?
Yep.
salute to North Carolina playing a game at Hawaii tonight. I love that.
No, I'm with you. I'd love to give
at 11:30 Central, by the way.
I'd love to give college administrators and coaches the benefit of the doubt. I'm a little woke on it. You know why I think we're starting to see it more? Because the net rating factors in road, like they're willing to go play road games more now because it boosts your numbers better, more than RPI did.
Can I put on my tinfoil hat here?
You got my full attention.
We're going to start seeing football teams do it. Because as we see these rankings kind of trickle out, and everybody is crapping on Indiana and Penn State for their strength of schedule, maybe you just test yourself. You play that harder game. Hey, man, we got the 40th best schedule in the country here. We may have lost by 50, but hey, we got the 40th best schedule in the country. Instead of 101, quiets the critics.
I think you're right, but I think it's for a different reason. I think the television partners are going to sit there and go, hey, y'all, we ain't paying you $60 million a year. We're not paying each school $60 million a year to watch SoCon Saturday.
By the way, just you know, circling back to college basketball tonight. So we've got Duke, Arizona, blue blood matchup in Tucson, the house that Lute Olson built, the rematch of the 1997, 98?
I think 97 was Patino.
Arizona won the title in 97?
No, Kentucky won in 97. Arizona won in 98, I believe.
Okay, and then Duke lost in 99. But regardless, a rematch of the 1997 Maui Invitational Championship that I may or may not have attended, Duke and Arizona. It's on ESPN2. Like, that's where college basketball is. It's like, it's November, you've got these great games, and it ain't even on the main four-letter network.
No, because it's NBA night for them, right?
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, they don't come onto the forefront until much later. I mean, did anybody realize that Baylor and St. John's played this freaking ridiculously crazy game last night? No, because it was on CBS Sports Network.
Shout out GP.
That was a hell of a game, man.
That was, and then Patino afterwards did not disappoint. That
Angry Rick is awesome. I love Angry
Feisty
Rick.
Feisty Rick was the best.
That's what old people do. They get fired up, man.
All right, so let's take a look at the weekend. I am of the opinion the conversation starts tomorrow in Columbus. Do you agree?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Are you talking about, like, upset potential? Or are you just saying...
I think it is the game that is going to impact the most amount of teams.
SEC people, if Indiana loses, let's just start there, by 1 to 50,
okay,
anywhere in between, the SEC is already ready to pick at it. Like, they lose by, let's say they lose by 1. Indiana loses by 1. Well, you know, they were outgained by 83 yards, and in the second quarter, they got this fumble that went their way. Like, they are ready. No matter what, assuming Ohio State wins the game, they're ready to pull out their tweezers and start picking away at Indiana because they need Indiana out. Tennessee is in trouble. Tennessee is in a lot of trouble to get into the playoff. They need, well, here's the thing. If you're Tennessee, we'll start with there because I know there's plenty of Tennessee fans obviously listening to this program. The facts are you're not in good shape in the eyes of the committee because you have the G5 team that's going to get in. You have the Big 12 team that's going to get in. You have the ACC team that's going to get in. You are cheering for tomorrow, number one and foremost, Ohio State to curb stomp Indiana.
Yes.
No mercy. Sweep the leg every which way. Number two, you're cheering for America. Because if Army beats Notre Dame, you're in good shape. Notre Dame, adios. They're out. So those are the two.
Okay, but can I push back a little bit? I think you're actually pulling for Notre Dame tomorrow, and then you're pulling for SC next week. Because if Army beats Notre Dame. I don't think this is going to happen, but could you wind up in a situation where Army and Boise are both two of the five highest-ranked champions?
Does that affect you? Does that affect the SEC? I don't think it does, because in that scenario, which I don't think is crazy, unlikely but not crazy, the Big 12 is not really affecting Tennessee right now. No matter who gets in, we know for a fact it'll be five conference champions in the field. That is a factual statement that has to happen. The Big 12 doesn't have to get in. They probably will, but they don't have to. So if Army beats Notre Dame, the scenario that you're mentioning there, Army beats Notre Dame, then they beat Tulane in the AAC championship game, and they're 13-0 with two really good wins. I understand your point about USC, and I guess if we're saying what would be the perfect scenario, you're probably right. But I still think if you're a Tennessee fan, you're pulling hard for Army tomorrow night.
I think the other thing, another clean way, is you can pull for the Gators tomorrow early.
Yeah, I mean, because I think you're right. I think if Ole Miss, I mean, look, you could get weird and like, hey, I'm cheering for UMass. Like, all right, UMass is not going to beat Georgia.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech's not going to beat Georgia. But you could be also cheering for Oklahoma. You could also be cheering for Auburn.
Well, like, I do think a dream scenario for you is, and I don't know how this would work out in the SEC title game. I believe what would happen is we get an Alabama-Georgia rematch. But what you could cheer for is Auburn tomorrow and then Texas A&M next Saturday.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Look, I just think we've gotten to the point. I am kind of feeling like we felt this way. I forget what week it was. It was like the first week of October when everything hit the fan. It was the week before that, like, amazing on paper slate that we had, which I think was like the third Saturday of October.
Yeah,
this year.
I think it was October 12th.
That was the crazy day, right?
Yeah.
I'm kind of getting this vibe tomorrow. Like, I don't know if it's going to be Indiana. I don't know if it's going to be Army. I think Auburn could be tricky there against Texas A&M. I kind of think Oklahoma could be tricky for Alabama. I think SMU could be in trouble at Virginia. We're getting to the point where it felt like this week's ranking, and I don't know, you tell me if I'm crazy, because All right. You do this show every day, and I only do it 2 days a week. But I have started to get the feeling like this was the loudest week. This was the week where Tennessee fans, where Georgia fans, where all of these folks, hell, Big 12 backers, everyone was getting loud. Everyone was like, oh my God, there's no way we can get in now. And it's like, all right, well, Indiana and Ohio State play each other. That's a pretty darn big game. Texas still plays Texas A&M on the road at Kyle Field. Penn State goes to Minnesota, row the boat. We've got Virginia hosting SMU. We've got Notre Dame playing in a baseball stadium against a weird offense. We've got Alabama going on the road to Oklahoma. Like, I just think Ole Miss is going to the swamp. I think there's some weird things brewing tomorrow. We've watched and followed this sport too long. We're getting to the assuming point. And me as a Notre Dame fan, that's starting to scare the hell out of me, because it's like, oh yeah, Notre Dame, are they going to be playing on a Friday or Saturday in the playoff? I'm like, I don't know. Let's just beat the next two teams. Like, let's just beat Army and Southern Cal on the road. I get a weird feeling about tomorrow. I think it could be weird. I think Colorado could lose to Kansas. I think BYU could lose again. Like, I'm looking at the top 15, man, and I'm saying, I think things are getting wacky tomorrow.
Okay, so I think the question is, where does it get weird? Because what we're talking about right now is, if Indiana goes, to me, it's like, if Indiana goes to Ohio State and wins, all right, that's at the top. Like, now all of a sudden,
that scenario hasn't even been brought up.
Correct. Like, all of a sudden, we are legitimately talking about Indiana perhaps playing for the number one seed. If they go on the road and win at Ohio State, and then they curb stomp Purdue, and then they beat Oregon, there's going to be a lot of noise for an undefeated Big Ten champion to be the number one seed, despite the fact that you'd sit there and go, they have only two good wins.
Does Indiana If they win, which hasn't even been discussed, which is, I think, is the craziest thing. Do I think Indiana's going to win tomorrow? No. It's weird that it hasn't even been discussed. I feel like Army beating Notre Dame has been much more discussed than Indiana beating Ohio State.
I agree, because it feels like,
I mean, Notre Dame in their defense did lose to a crappy MAC team. So it is plausible, I guess, that Notre Dame could lose as a 2-touchdown favorite when they already lost by as a 4-touchdown favorite this year.
I do agree with you, though, in the sense that it feels like the only suspense for the Indiana-Ohio State game is how much does Ohio State win by?
Well, I mean, we had people on national television say that Indiana should not start their quarterback. So, you know, things are a little wacky right now. People are getting a little
loopy.
Wait,
hold on. Who?
Oh, you didn't see that?
No, because I was going to ask you if Indiana has the better quarterback.
Oh, Desmond Howard on the Reveal show said that Indiana should think about not playing Curtis Rourke, and I thought Greg McElroy's head was going to explode.
Okay, that's a take.
It's an interesting one. I guess because if they get blown out with, I don't even want to.
So I guess the argument would be if they don't play their quarterback and they get beat, you can use the excuse
we didn't play our quarterback.
Right, but it's one thing if he doesn't play because of injury. It's another thing if you elect not to play him.
So back to the original thought process. If Indiana beats Ohio State, Ohio State's fine, assuming they beat Michigan, because they have the win over Penn State. And then it's this Penn State situation where I'm not saying that Penn State's schedule, and the metrics say that it's not a terrible schedule, and boy, wasn't it interesting that Illinois found their way into the top 25. Interesting to see that one.
What an unbelievable coincidence.
Man, you know, all this crap, this talk about Penn State having a crappy schedule, and then, boop, Illinois pops into the top 25.
That's a top 25 win.
What a shocker. I mean, I tell you what, I was pretty blown away by that 3-touchdown win by the Illini over Michigan State the week prior, but that's just, I mean, we've seen that for years now in this. It's, you know, that random team that, like, finds its way into the top 25 is, hey, see, they got a win. They got a top 25 win. But, yeah, I mean, I think the Indiana one, that's the worst-case scenario for the SEC, clearly, because then it's not even a debate. Indiana's going to the playoff. They could even lose to, they could lose to Purdue. Like, it'd still make the playoff because they'd have a win on the road at Ohio State.
And I think they would be in the Big Ten championship game.
They would be in the Big Ten championship game. And then that's
although,
the other.
Would that weirdly put Penn State in, maybe?
I don't know. If they lost to Purdue, which right. I can't even discuss.
No,
that.
I'm.
That is even, like, there's. If Indiana beat Ohio State and lost to Purdue, the world might end the following day. Like, that might be, that's just a bridge too far. I'm all for talking about scenarios. I can't even discuss that. Purdue is such an embarrassment.
No, I'm with you entirely. So I guess now the big question is, because I was kind of following out your thought process of this could get weird. I feel like, though, historically, the week before rivalry week is kind of the sleepy teams don't look good. Like, I just always envision Harbaugh's Michigan farting around with, like, Illinois or farting around with Maryland, but the results don't really flip. Cause I went back to last year's week before rivalry week. And basically that's kind of what you see. You see a lot of, all right, this game shouldn't have been that close, but there wasn't a ton of upsetting the apple cart.
So let's just run through real quickly the games that are on this week for the big time teams. All right. Oregon's off. Ohio State plays Indiana. We know about that one. Texas plays Kentucky. Do I think Kentucky could win that game? No. Could it get weird? Maybe.
Fun fact, Texas in SEC play, when the team is playing the right quarterback, 0-4 against the number.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't lay it with like, I'll just say this, and we'll get into our betting cards later in the show. I wouldn't be out there laying big numbers. And I know there's a thought process, especially for teams kind of in that, like, 6 to 12 range where they need the beauty pageant, which is fair, but I think there's the pressure. I think there's this tightness where Penn State go to Minnesota. I think they could get weird. But there's also the Bear, our friend Chris Felica, the Bear, put out this, that James Franklin, in what he calls the sweet spot, as a favorite of 7 to 17 points, he's 14-0 against the spread. But P.J. Fleck...
So he's that, due.
That P.J. Fleck, that team plays good defense. Sky Uma, row the boat. He loves being a dog. Could get weird on the road. Notre Dame Army. It's a baseball stadium. You're playing a team that wants to limit possessions. Could get weird. Alabama at Oklahoma. It's been a disaster of a season for the Sooners. They're catching 2 touchdowns at home. Night game. Could get weird. Miami. Who are they playing?
Wake Forest.
I can't discuss that one.
Yeah, that might get like a huge score, but I do not see a world where Hank Bachmeier can beat Cam Ward.
Ole Miss at Florida? I kind of think Ole Miss might destroy him, but...
I'll tell you where I'm leaning. I think Florida knew they had to get either LSU or Ole Miss.
Yeah, to get to a bowl.
And then because they have lifeless Florida State next week. And when they got the I was telling my wife, who's a big Ole Miss fan, I was like, I think that's a good thing that Florida won that game. Because the other thing was, while Lagway played, he cannot move. And the Ole Miss defensive front, I think, is hungry. It's feast week for them.
I'll mention this. The betting market is obviously not the be-all, end-all, and markets move one way or the other, and they're wrong often. Not a lot, but they're wrong. Nothing's perfect in betting. The betting market is moving on this game as if Ole Miss is going to win big.
And Trey Harris comes back.
They're out to a 13-point favorite at Circa here in Las Vegas. So do with that what you will. I don't think the Gators are primed for an upset, but they have been capable this year.
I mean, Ole Miss lost to Kentucky.
Right.
With Trey Harris.
Georgia plays UMass. I can't even discuss that situation.
Oh, I looked this up. So since 1995.
The fired coach bump, huh?
But I've looked it up since 1995. Now, if you want to take some points, there's a case to be made for this. Favorites in the month of November of 38.5 or more, so over that key number of 38, they're 17-41-1 against the spread, but they're 60-0. So like Tennessee and Georgia are going to win tomorrow. But like, you can talk me into it. If you want to just have some fun and take 6 touchdowns, have at it.
I will say, small sample size, 4 teams prior to this week fired their coach this year. All 4 covered the following week, and UMass fired Don Brown. Now, none of those teams played Georgia.
Correct.
But just point it out. Trends can be your friends until they're not. But, yeah, I mean, and I already mentioned SMU goes to Virginia. You know, Virginia, I think Tony Elliott as a dog in ACC play is like 13-3 or something like that. So I just – maybe you're right. Maybe we don't see crazy upsets, but I think there's just a lot of – I think you're getting to the point of, like, Penn State has never really played with this pressure before.
Well, I do think what makes it different comparing it historically is usually by this point in the calendar, your fate is sealed.
Right.
And now we have introduced, what, realistically, what do you think? 15 teams can still make a claim that we can get there?
Yeah.
And so... you've added, you know, we're normally at this time of the year, we're really talking about 6 teams, maybe 7. We've now at least doubled it, and they're now playing with a different type of pressure.
100%. You got SMU at Virginia. You've got BYU at Arizona State. Texas A&M at Auburn. Colorado versus Kansas at Arrowhead. Like, you've got all of these teams, and, you know, Colorado... I don't know if people realize this. They've covered the last 8 games they've played.
Oh, no, they've been an absolute machine.
So they didn't cover against North Dakota State week 1. Then they lost to Nebraska. Since then, they're 8-0 against the spread. They lost a game to Kansas State, but I believe they closed like a 3.5-point dog in that spot. But this week, it was loud out of Colorado. It has been quiet in Boulder. Like this week, let's run through the week for Colorado just real quickly.
Yep.
Travis Hunter is now the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. He declares for the NFL draft, not a surprise. They're pumping out all of the Travis for Heisman stuff, which is normal. I'm not saying that's not that's normal for a school to do.
I mean, LSU took out a billboard next to Allegiant, right?
Yes.
Yes.
You have Dion, Coach Prime, announced that they're going all to the Shrine Bowl. We coming. Then Shador is handing off the keys to this prized recruit, Julian Lewis, that they flipped from USC. And then you get all the nonsense about would Dion go to the Cowboys if they could draft Shador. Like, it's been quiet for the most part out of Boulder this year. This week, it's been loud.
Now, I will say, historically with them, when they're loud, that means they feel pretty good. Like, I used to, last year I had the theory, if it was quiet, bet against them. And if it was loud, bet.
It was loud going into the Colorado State game, which they almost lost.
Yeah.
But I hear you. Look,
when you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'll just say this about Colorado. I hope they make the playoff. They're a fun story. They've got maybe, I think they've got the best talent, most talented quarterback in the country. They've got stud wide receivers, and I'm not just talking about Travis Hunter. I'm talking like
Shepard's
Webster.
Shepard's a good player.
Shepard's good. Like, they got dudes, man. And their defense has played pretty well. So I hope they make the playoff. Better be buttoned up this weekend, though.
No, Kansas has basically been living for this spot, and they still have the ability to get to a bowl game.
Kansas is the Big 12 Grim Reaper. Killed Iowa State, killed BYU, and now they're out to slay Colorado.
All right, let's take a quick break. Let's get our attention to the SEC, and we'll talk big picture stuff with Blake Topmeyer next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast is SEC Football Unfiltered. New episodes available each and every week wherever you get your podcasts on X at B Topmeyer. Blake, the game that interests you the most this weekend is what and why?
Yeah, I think it's got to be Ohio State, Indiana, because, I mean, that's the one with major playoff implications. I mean, this is a test of is Indiana real or not? Because let's unpack what it means for the playoff, what it means for Indiana. Like, if they go out and beat Ohio State on the road, Indiana would have a case to be the number one ranked team in the country. Like, we can squabble about strength of schedule and all this other stuff, but Indiana at that point would be 11-0 with the best road win of the season, this side of maybe Georgia beating Texas and Austin. So that's on the one hand. On the other hand, if Indiana loses bad enough, they're out of the playoff potentially, entirely. So, you know, on the high end, you could be number one. On the low end, you could fall to like number 13, 14 with a blowout loss. So, yeah, I think that's kind of where the conversation starts this weekend.
Well, I think we were just talking about it, Blake. If you're a Tennessee fan and right now your current situation is not ideal, it's not impossible to see the Vols get into the playoff, just a couple things go their way, but they're certainly sitting there tomorrow with their scarlet and gray on because they want a butt whipping. Because, you know, I'm curious your thoughts on this. We've seen the committee so far, whether it's fair or not, they have dinged teams for late losses, right? Georgia dropped 9 spots losing to Ole Miss. BYU dropped 8 spots despite a win over SMU losing to Kansas. So if we see Indiana lose big, I wouldn't be surprised if we see them drop a decent amount and fall out of the bracket.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it would have to be fairly lopsided, right? Probably 3 scores or more for them to spiral all the way out of the bracket. But as you correctly said, I mean, we've seen this. Georgia lost by 3 possessions to Ole Miss. They dropped 9 spots. Now, conversely, Miami lost to Georgia Tech. It was their first loss of the season. It was a more competitive game. I believe they only dropped like 5 spots week over week. And so there is a path for Indiana if they lose. If they get blown out, there may not be a path for Indiana. But it's interesting with Tennessee because there's like 4 games that's on the average Tennessee fan's radar this weekend. And I'm not even talking about their game against UTEP. Like, that ought to be a slam dunk, right? But if you're a Vols fan, your head's on a swivel this weekend because you got, yes, you have the Indiana-Ohio State game. Is that going to be a blowout? But in that same time window, you also have Ole Miss going to the Swamp with DJ Lagway back on the field, Florida playing a little bit better, coming off the win against LSU last week. If Ole Miss loses, they're out of the field. Then in that afternoon CBS window, you have Penn State at Minnesota. Now, this is the type of game that James Franklin has made his living on, right? Beating up on mediocre mid-level of the conference opponents. But, I mean, Minnesota has been kind of Jekyll and Hyde this year. Like, they've played well at times. They've played horrible at times. The game's on the road for Penn State. You know, not a layup. And then you go into the evening window and you have Notre Dame against Army. A loss to Army, I think, would be crippling for Notre Dame. So you got like 4 avenues just on one day for Tennessee fans to get back into the playoff mix. And that's not even bringing up what would happen the following weekend.
What's the right way to view Georgia? Because I was reading Bill Conley's piece that, you know, when he does the weekend recap that he does on Mondays, and I thought he made a good point and I agreed with him, so I was curious to know how you feel. The problem that Georgia has is the insane standard that they've set for themselves, in which when they play well and look good, you're like, eh, whatever, it's Georgia. But every time that they don't play well, you see this is, you know, they're not good and whatnot. Like, what is the right way to view Georgia?
Well, I think Georgia's being undervalued, and I do agree with the line of thinking you referenced there, is that like Georgia's held to this number one standard, which is kind of the perch they'd earned the last 3 or 4 years. But on top of that, I think something you also mentioned earlier, not directly to Georgia, also applies. Like, this committee, like a lot of committees, penalizes you more for late losses than they do for early losses. And so the fact that that loss, that 3-possession loss, happened to Ole Miss in November, you know, if that would have happened like mid-October, early October, September, I think Georgia's ranking probably looks a little bit different right now. But the fact that, you know, it's still in the mind, and yeah, they go out and they beat Tennessee at Sanford Stadium last weekend, but still, I think that wound of the Ole Miss loss is fresh in the committee's mind. I also think, like, this glob of 2-loss teams from the SEC is really difficult for the committee to handle, because when you look at Alabama, Ole Miss, Georgia, and Tennessee, all of them have played some member of that mix. Some of them have played 2 members of that mix, but nobody's played everybody, and everybody's won at least 1 game against someone else from that quartet, but you know, also has dings against them as well. And so it's really hard for the committee, I think, to handle those 4 teams, because you can't just go by head-to-head. Like, if You know, you look at Ole Miss beats Georgia, but Georgia beats Tennessee, but Tennessee beat Alabama, and Alabama beat Georgia. Like, I just think, like, that's putting the committee into a corner a little bit. And I'm no committee apologist, as you guys know, but, like, I do think in that particular foursome of teams, it is a nightmare for the committee to handle. Now, I think you could argue that a few of those teams, including Georgia, are being undervalued by the committee as it pertains to teams like Notre Dame, like Miami, like Penn State even. But when it's comparing them against other SEC teams in that mix that they've played, they've beaten some, lost to others, I just think it's kind of hard to know what to do with them.
Look, as a Notre Dame fan, I have stayed quiet because they have the worst loss of any team in contention, and you know, the schedule has not been great. I mean, it's pretty obvious. I mean, the Texas A&M win is nice, so I speak of that because Texas A&M, I look at this spot, and I know Jeffrey's going to disagree. I think this is a tricky, tricky spot to go to the Plains. I know it's been a nightmare of a season for Hugh Freeze, but wouldn't they love to knock off Texas A&M? Because all anyone could talk about right now, Blake, is next week. What happens if A&M beats Texas? What are we going to do? Well, Texas A&M's got to get there with two losses first. What do you make of this one? Night game, Jordan Hare, line is wildly low, just 2.5 in favor of A&M. What do you make of this one on Saturday night?
Yeah, my initial instinct is that I agree with you. This feels like a little bit of a trap game for A&M because you got the big rivalry game against Texas the following week. I keep telling myself that, like, Auburn's not quite as bad as what their record is, but I don't know. At some point, maybe we have to admit that Auburn is as bad as the record says it is. But on the flip side of that, like, I think the falling apart of LSU sort of forces us to reevaluate Texas A&M a little bit, right? Because the signature victory on A&M's schedule is that rally in the second half against LSU that at the time we thought, you know, that's a great win, right? Well, now, you know, now that LSU is unraveled, it's like, that's still a good win, but is it a great win? And then they followed that up by having the doors beat off of them by South Carolina, a team that I think has been undervalued all season. In some ways, I do feel like this is a vulnerable spot for A&M. On the other hand, the counter argument to that is Auburn's entire program, their entire program, is built on beating Alabama. I mean, Hugh Freeze was thinking about Alabama and Nick Saban for some reason, even before the season started, and talking about how, like, oh, I almost beat Nick Saban last year. But you didn't. You blew it. Like, that is Auburn's entire program. Their entire existence is built around one game, beating Alabama. And so while we can say, like, is A&M overlooking this moment and looking ahead to Texas, I also think it's like Auburn builds its entire season around the Iron Bowl. How much do they care about this game with the Iron Bowl and the chance to spoil Alabama's season, which would mean so much more to them than spoiling Texas A&M's a glimmer of a playoff hope. So, yeah, I'm kind of arguing with myself, but I can see two trains of thought. If I was a better, I'm not. If I was a better, this is a game I wouldn't go near. I know some people look at this line and say, hammer the Aggies because, you know, they only have to cover, what, like a 2.5-point spread.
Game of the year.
Yeah. What's that?
Game of the year.
You think so? You're
game of the year.
Yeah.
Disagree.
Okay, think about it in these terms, because what you're right about Auburn is – Auburn down to down hasn't been that bad, but their turnovers are remarkably crippling. Well, I just don't know if I want to go into a battle with Peyton Thorne against A&M's defense, and I'm asking him to take care of the football. And also, don't forget what this was last year. This was New Mexico State weekend.
And that's the point I'm talking about, like, with Auburn, you know, looking ahead to the Iron Bowl. Like I said, like, they build their program, they build their season. I think Hugh Freeze in particular builds it all around trying to beat Alabama, right? And I think you make a fair point with New Mexico State last year.
All right, this is the other thing I was thinking about in terms of the SEC, because I know you've written about tiebreaker scenarios, whatnot. Why did we not? I thought the tiebreaker used to always be where they're ranked in the college football playoff. And I know that's something you suggest. why did we get away from that? Because to me, like, that's the duh. Like, you're trying to, like, get your best teams. If you want to make the game matter the most, like, why did we get away from that?
Yeah, I think there's two schools of thought on this. And as you know, you're in my column, and it seems like you agree. Like, I like the idea of applying the rankings at some point in the tiebreaker process. I think the counter argument to that, which I don't necessarily subscribe to, but I see the point, is the rankings incorporate non-conference games. Right. And so in tiebreaker scenarios, you could be punished in the rankings for something that has nothing to do with your performance in the conference. And so the tiebreaker could go against you because you lost a non-conference game. Say in Texas A&M's case, you know, they lost a non-conference game to Notre Dame that some schools of thought say should have nothing to do with who goes to the conference championship. And to a certain extent, I agree with that. Right. Like, I think that the conference standings are first and foremost. That's rule number one. If Texas A&M takes care of Auburn and then upsets, at least, you know, I think probably by betting lines, upsets Texas the following weekend, then they've earned the right to be in Atlanta. They would have the best conference record. You're there. However, I think once we get into these tiebreaker scenarios, if head-to-head doesn't take care of it, I do think the college football playoff rankings are a cleaner way and a way for folks without four PhDs to understand how do we break this tie. But like I said, the counter argument to that would be that what you achieved or failed to achieve in your non-conference portion of the schedule does influence rankings, and so then thereby would influence whether you make the conference championship game or not. To me, that's worth it because I think that is more likely to get, as you said, the two best teams in the conference championship versus some goofy tiebreaker.
What did you say? It was like combined point margin of common opponent. Like it was something like who even came up with that?
Yeah, there's this word capped, like relative capped scoring margin. Like I don't know what a relative capped scoring margin is.
Are we filtering out garbage time? Like what are we doing here?
I have no idea, and it strikes me as that, like, coaches don't understand this. And I'm not saying, you know, coaches are the geniuses of the world out there, but, like, these are the people working in the trenches of this day in, day out, and they don't have any clue of how these tiebreakers work. The fans that are watching this,
think about this.
Tickets, they don't have
the Big Ten didn't even know that Oregon had clinched a spot until Tuesday.
That's hilarious, right?
That was an all-timer for me. That's like this is where we are.
2 hours to realize that Oregon had clinched a spot in the Big. That tells me you're doing something wrong. And yes, I understand the argument that rankings are not totally fair. They're subjective. But, like, we trust the rankings to determine the at-large teams that are going to the playoff. And so if we trust the rankings to decide who's going to the playoff, why can't we trust the rankings to break the ties of who's going to the conference championship games? I'm not saying, like, throw out the conference records.
Right.
That should be first.
Correct.
But if the conference records can't decide, and if the head-to-head can't decide, then to me, the third step in the process is we should go to the rankings, and if you blew it in the non-conference portion of your schedule, sorry, but once we get that deep in the tiebreakers,
you had your chance.
That's the fairest way to decide. Yeah.
Blake, this weekend, the underdog monsters that are Vanderbilt go to Baton Rouge, and the LSU situation is pretty interesting because I believe the buyout for Brian Kelly is like $60 million. It's year three, and when you look at year one, I think they overachieved a little bit, right? They lose that opener to Florida State, but they get to the SEC championship game. They win their bowl game by like a billion, and then last year, I know a lot of LSU fans, there was this awful taste in their mouth because they had this juggernaut offense with Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas and the Heisman Trophy winner and Jaden Daniels, and they end up, you know, in a random bowl game against Wisconsin. And then this year, the wheels have fallen off. They've lost three straight games by double digits. And oh, by the way, whether it was their fault or not, Bryce Underwood, the prize product or the prize possession, so to speak, for next year, just flipped to go to Michigan. And yes, I know flipped is a relative term because he just got more money to go to Michigan. I totally understand that. But I texted someone down in Baton Rouge yesterday. I just go, sky falling, ? And his response was, yep. So what's the future hold for LSU? Because we all thought it. Brian Kelly at LSU didn't make a lot of sense. And 3 years in, it still doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I think next season's shaping up as absolutely critical for Brian Kelly. I mean, with the Bryce Underwood flip, I know there was a little bit of social media noise, which I don't put really any stock into, but just in terms of taking the temperature of a fan base, I guess it applies a little bit of, like, is Brian Kelly in trouble now? I don't think Brian Kelly's in trouble in terms of the next couple weeks fearing for his job. But I think anything that could go wrong has gone wrong for Brian Kelly the last few weeks, which I think makes next season make or break potentially for him. And I've gone back and forth, like, does that mean playoff or bust? I don't know if it's playoff or bust, but it has to be substantially better. There has to be – LSU fans have to believe this time next year that Brian Kelly is a guy that can win a national championship at LSU. And if it's a repeat of this season, nobody's going to believe that Brian Kelly can win a national championship. And I've been the guy for weeks that has said, like, yeah, it's really ugly, but he's got a really nice recruiting class lined up, including Bryce Underwood, but you have to get him into the boat. They're not getting him into the boat. And you're right, I think NIL is influencing this. But on the flip side of that, if LSU was 9-1 right now or 8-2, what would Bryce Underwood's decision be? The short answer is we don't know, but I do wonder if he would still be in the boat for LSU, if this thing hadn't unraveled the past couple weeks the way it has. And so we've seen Brian Kelly get right before. He had a blow-up season at Notre Dame where they went 4-8, and we know how that went. He bounced back. He never won a national championship at Notre Dame, but he did solidify his footing over the course of several years. But I think the demands of LSU are more extreme. The schedule's more extreme. The walls are closing in. And it is paramount now, if LSU loses Garrett Nussmeier to the NFL draft, which, I don't know, I would think, I'm not a draft expert, but I would think Nussmeier's a day one or a day two pick in the draft, so it's probably tempting for him to go to the draft and what is not, you know, the world's greatest draft class of quarterbacks. If he goes, and you don't have Bryce Underwood lined up anymore, like, it is critical for Brian Kelly to now get a quarterback, a high-level quarterback in the transfer portal. But then on top of that, he's got so many other issues to address, right? Because, like, this season, Nussmeier's not been perfect, but he hasn't been anywhere near the headline of the issues for LSU. He's been one of their few strengths. And so you add into that if you lose Nussmeier, you have to get a new quarterback. Oh, and by the way, you have to find a running game. You have to find a defense, X, Y, Z. I just think the problems are mounting for Brian Kelly. He doesn't have to win a national championship next season to keep his job, but it has to be substantially better than this. It has to leave LSU fans this time next year believing we got the right guy. And I think you'd be hard-pressed in this moment to find any sober LSU fan thinking they got the right guy. And you don't even want to talk to what the non-sober LSU fans are thinking, because it's not fit for these airwaves.
I know, this is not, I've covered this, I'm not covering this recruitment, but I do know this to be true. Did Bryce Underwood show up at Michigan yesterday?
Did he show up at Michigan?
Yeah. Has he signed anything? I know is when LSU's back's against the wall and it comes into a bidding war, they're a formidable foe.
I get what you're saying here. Yeah. But this could just be the ongoing negotiation.
Correct.
For Bryce Underwood. And you're right. Like,
eight figures, man. Eight figures.
We are still a month out from signing day, and there are other fish in the sea. Like, now, there's not another Bryce Underwood in the sea. I get that. But I also think, like, there is the transfer portal savior here that you didn't used to have. And so, like, I'm not saying any single event is crippling to Brian Kelly. But the totality of the circumstances here is it has been a nightmarish last 15 days, 20 days for Brian Kelly, and it is undeniably ratcheting up the heat on him. I'm also not, like, it is just so easy to dunk on Brian Kelly and say, like, this guy's horrible.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything, and that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.